All right, good morning, everybody. Well, afternoon, I guess, 12:04. That makes it 4 minutes afternoon, no longer morning. And I really enjoy your sharing. I know everybody else does. That honesty that just comes through you without even thinking about it is incredible. We love it. We love it. So what I'm going to do is play a song. There are a few songs that have just been like favorites my entire life. And or at least ever since I first heard them. And this is one of those songs. Originally, it's sung by Barbra Streisand, but I decided to play the Glee version. But it's from the movie Funny Girl. And it's Don't Rain on My Parade.
Don't tell me not to live, just sit and putter. Life's candy and the sun's a ball of butter. Don't bring around a cloud to rain on my parade. Don't tell me not to fly, I've simply got to. If someone takes a spill, it's me and not you. Who told you you're allowed to rain on my parade? How much am I bailed out? I'm beating my drum. And if I'm fanned out, your turn at that, sir. At least I didn't fake it, hat, sir. I guess I didn't make it, but whether on the rose of sheer perfection, a freckle on the nose of life's complexion, the cinder or the shiny apple of its eye, I gotta fly once, I gotta try once, only can die once, right, sir? Oh, life is juicy, juicy, and you see I gotta have my bite, sir. Get ready for me, love, 'cause I'm a comer. I simply gotta march, my heart's a drummer. Don't bring around a cloud to rain on my parade. I'm gonna live and live now. Get what I want, I know how. One roll for the whole shebang. One throw, that bell will go clang. Eye on the target and wham. One shot, one gunshot. Hey, Mr. Ornstein, here I am. I'll march my band out. I'll beat my drum. And if I'm fanned out, your turn at bat, sir. At least I didn't fake it, hatch, sir. Guess I didn't make it. Get ready for me, love, 'cause I'm a comer. I simply gotta march, my heart's a drummer. No, somebody don't know. Nobody is gonna rain on my parade.
And to me, that's a song about following your heart, even if it turns out you were wrong, or even if it turns out that you, quote, fail, right? That it, you know, in living life, you have to follow your heart, right? You just have to. Otherwise, you know, last week at the retreat, I asked people when they're on their deathbed and they're looking back on their life, you know, what is it that they want to see? And what would they feel like they wasted their life or they had big regrets if they didn't see when they look back on their life, right? And if that's awakening, great, go for it. If that's traveling the world, great, go for it. Whatever that is, but make sure you live this life according to your heart. And that's what that song is all about to me. So I've always loved it. So now we're here for Enlightened Leadership with the Tao Te Ching. And we're going to be looking at chapter 20. And chapter 20 is a little long. And I feel like starting with the Stephen Mitchell version today, just because it's simpler. I think we'll look at the simpler one first, and then we'll look at the others. So I'll read Stephen Mitchell first. Stop thinking and end your problems. What difference between yes and no? What difference between success and failure? Must you value what others value? Avoid what others avoid? How ridiculous. Other people are excited as though they were at a parade. I alone don't care. I alone am expressionless, like an infant before it can smile. Other people have what they need. I alone possess nothing. I alone drift about like someone without a home. I'm like an idiot. My mind is so empty. Other people are bright. I alone am dark. Other people are sharp. I alone am dull. Other people have a purpose. I alone don't know. I drift like a wave on the ocean. I blow as aimless as the wind. I am different from ordinary people. I drink from the great mother's breasts. Ooh, Spanish Peaks. He drinks from the Spanish Peaks. Those of you who haven't seen the Spanish Peaks, they're two mountains that look very much like breasts. I think this is really funny because you know me, I didn't read this in advance, but I kind of had a secret wish for today, and my secret wish is addressed in this. Plus, I can also see how the song that I just played fits with this. Let me talk about my secret wish. Last night in Gentle Healing 3, I talked about the Jeffrey Martin interview. And this morning when I was taking a shower, I realized there was one thing I hadn't talked about. And I thought, ooh, I hope the opportunity to talk about that comes up. And I think it just came up. Because it was another thing that people had written to me with concerns after the Jeffrey Martin interview. And some people even said, I don't want that. And that was when Jeffrey mentioned that from what he called level 4 and beyond, that people no longer experienced emotion, not even love. And people are like, I don't want that. Well, if you listen very carefully, I'll read this again, but if you listen very carefully, you will hear in this that that's exactly what Lao Tzu is talking about here. He is describing that state of mind. But also, before I read on, I want to point out that the first paragraph, you know, at least in the humble opinion of this author, being Lao Tzu, this way of seeing is way better than everybody else's way of seeing. You know, it's like there's something wrong, and we'll look at what that might be. And I hate to use the word wrong, but you know how words are. There's something wrong with I'll call it emotional living, for lack of better words right now. So why don't we look at this very carefully, and let's start with the top paragraph again. Stop thinking and end your problems. What difference between yes and no? What difference between success and failure? Must you value what others value? Avoid what others avoid? How ridiculous. So I think what's happening in the first paragraph maybe is that Lao Tzu is describing what's wrong with emotional living. And it kind of reminds me, there's an internet commercial right now, an Xfinity commercial, which is playing off the old saying about keeping up with the Joneses. And if you've seen that commercial, everybody's like, I don't remember the names, the last names, but we're keeping up with the Joneses, or we're keeping up with the Smiths, or we're keeping up with the McKenzies, or we're keeping up with the, you know, whatever. You know, because everybody's getting this great Xfinity internet. But I think what Lao Tzu is saying here, though, is that there's a stress, a fear, and a suffering in living life according to what you have been taught is good or bad or success or failure or valuable or not valuable. That when you live your life according to what you have been taught, rather than just following your heart, regardless, there's going to be some suffering there. The last time I taught the Enlightened Leadership, we talked about the fact that, you know, rules maybe in today's society, since not everyone knows how to follow intuition and guidance, are necessary. But when you do follow intuition and guidance, you can't live by the rules alone. You have to know when intuition or guidance is guiding you in a different direction. The guidance is supreme to rules. Well, in a way, this is a similar thought. You know, for example, you may, depending on where you're from, you may have learned, he says, what's the difference between yes and no? I know a lot of people who have learned that when someone asks you to do something, to say yes is polite and caring and loving. And to say no is rude, selfish, right? And we all know that as a result of this, there are a lot of people who really get themselves into stressful binds or get themselves into doing things they don't really want to do, because as a result of this belief, they're conditioned to say yes. And even if intuition is prompting them this time to say no, they ignore it and they say yes anyway. And so they get themselves into trouble. Other people, of course, are raised to believe that they need to achieve a certain amount of success in the world, whatever success looks like according to their family's definition, and usually in order to be worthy. You know, I mean, I know people who, according to one family's definition, are successful because they happen to be raised in highly successful families. According to their family's definition, they're not successful. And as a result, they're the unworthy one, the black sheep of the family. You know, so that definition of what is successful and what isn't varies. But notice Lao Tzu says, what's the difference between success and failure? You know, if you are living your life according to what you think your family expects of you, you're going to be unhappy, right? You're not going to be happy. You need to follow your own heart. He says, must you value what others value? I mean, this is broad, very broad. Do you have to get married if that's what everybody in your family does? Do you have to put your kids through Catholic school if that's what everybody else in your family does? You know, do you have to have a big house with a well-manicured lawn if that's what everybody else in your family does? You know, what are the other values? You know, do you have to live your life according to what your family or your friends or the Joneses value? Do you have to avoid what others avoid? Right? Maybe a bank account that's too low, for example. Do you have to avoid a low bank account, or is a low bank account okay, right? So it kind of fits with that song that I just played about Don't Rain on My Parade, because what Don't Rain on My Parade was all about was knowing for yourself what you want and going for it in spite of any outer voices that might tell you you shouldn't. In fact, I think if we were to go back and watch the scene in the movie, I think that what was happening here is she was going for a man that she wanted to marry. And I think her friends kind of ran up to her just before she bought her a train ticket or boat ticket, whatever it was. And they were saying, are you sure this is right? Are you sure he's not going to reject you? Are you sure he wants you, right? So the outer voices were basically saying, don't follow your heart. You know, don't follow your heart. And of course, she followed her heart anyway. And we saw in the song, she was even saying, you know, maybe this isn't going to work out the way I think. Oh, well, at least I tried. Right? In her own way, she was saying that. That's not an exact quote, but at least I tried. So with that thought in mind, listen to this again. Stop thinking. Now, to me, stop thinking means follow intuition. Right? Stop thinking and end your problems. What difference between yes and no? What difference between success and failure? Must you value what others value and avoid what others avoid? How ridiculous. So it's ridiculous to live your life according to the expectations of others. Right? And in the song, she talked about, you know, you just have, I don't remember the exact words, but the idea was you just got this one life. You know, you just got this one life. You gotta go after whatever it is you want to go after. You've got to follow your heart. I would say you've got to follow your calling. What if you trusted that that calling, whatever it is from God? You know, even if it's different from what everybody else in your family, in your social circle feels and wants. What if you trusted that calling was from God and you followed it? Like Moses followed his calling. And in fact, I love how Lao Tzu says, must you value what others value, avoid what others avoid? How ridiculous. That's a waste of a life right there. To live your life for others and not follow your heart, that's a waste of a life. Now here the word parade gets used a little differently than the song. She's saying, don't rain on my parade. Here he's using the parade as like an external, you know, shebang. Rather than an internal calling, which is how she used it in the song. He says, other people are excited as though they are at a parade, right? An external shebang. They're excited like they're at a parade. But then he goes along to describe his state of mind, which really was him following his inner calling, even though it was different than what the family or the social circle might have thought he should aim for, right? He says, I alone don't care. I alone am expressionless, like an infant before it can smile. Now, to a lot of people, this doesn't sound good. This is, you know, why when Jeffrey Martin said people at location 4 and above, you know, no longer live by emotion, no longer feel emotion. They don't even feel the emotion of love. And people are writing to me like, I don't want that. Well, let's continue to look at Lao Tzu as he describes exactly that state of mind. I alone don't care. I alone am expressionless, like an infant before it can smile. Other people have what they need. I alone possess nothing. I alone drift about like someone without a home. I'm like an idiot. My mind is so empty. Other people are bright. I alone am dark. And I don't think dark here means depressed. I think dark here, actually, when I ask within, I think dark here means, you know, not knowing. You know, I don't know everything like everybody else knows everything. They know what's going on. They know what they want. They know their opinions of this and that. You know, I don't have all of that, right? Other people are bright. I alone am dark. Other people are sharp. I alone am dull. Other people have a purpose. I alone don't know. I drift like a wave on the ocean. I blow as aimless as the wind. I am different from ordinary people. I drink from the great mother's breasts. So what I'm going to do is let you contemplate this for a moment. And as I ask you to contemplate it, I'm going to play another song. Let me pull that song up. You'll know this song immediately, and hopefully you'll see how it is related.
Well, on the way, head in a cloud, the man of a thousand voices talking perfectly loud, but nobody ever hears him or the sound he appears to make, and he never seems to notice what sun going down and the eyes in see the world spinning round. And nobody seems to like him, they can tell.
That wasn't even the whole song. This is like the hardest song to find on the internet, isn't it? Oh my goodness. Here we go. Oh wait, I may have just seen a lyrics version. Let's take a chance on this one. Noah says karaoke. Never mind. Never mind. We'll go back here. I love that one though, showing Paul McCartney acting out the fool on the hill. I think this is the full version. Let's give it a try.
Day after day. The man with the foolish grin is keeping perfectly still. But nobody wants to know him. They can see that he's just a fool. And he never gives an answer. But the fool on the hill sees the sun going down, and the eyes in his head see the world.
To find that, but that was the perfect video for this contemplation. What I am going to do is ask you guys to share. Before I ask you to share, since I know many of you don't have the book with you, let me just read this one more time. But after contemplating this and watching that video, I just want you to share whatever is coming up for you. Here we go. Stop thinking and end your problems. What difference between yes and no? What difference between success and failure? Must you value what others value, avoid what others avoid? How ridiculous. Other people are excited as though they were at a parade. I alone don't care. I alone am expressionless, like an infant before it can smile. Other people have what they need. I alone possess nothing. I alone drift about like someone without a home. I am like an idiot. My mind is so empty. Other people are bright. I alone am dark. Other people are sharp. I alone am dull. Other people have a purpose. I alone don't care. I drift like a wave on the ocean. I blow as aimless as the wind. I am different from ordinary people. I drink from the great mother's breasts. Okay, Rayla, I see your hand is up. You want to go ahead and take the mic?
Yeah, if I can figure out how. Okay, so I am loving that you're talking about this because I was re-listening to the Tao Te Ching Leaderships, and there was like four of the number 15. And in one of those, you had made the comment, love is expanding existence. And I had just read that Michael Rhodes said love was not an emotion, it was the power of creation. And that Nisargada Maharaj had said love was unity of consciousness, none of which of that has anything to do with emotion. And so I had been asking internally, okay, so then how does this line up with Bible verses that says love your neighbor and, you know, that sort of thing. And it's been driving me crazy. And I love what you just explained, because that would explain that love doesn't have emotion. Power of creation doesn't have to have emotion. And what was the other one? Shoot, I've lost it. It was right up here. Expansion. Expanding existence, yeah. Those would not be emotional things. So that's like another piece of the puzzle for me that I can put with this as I'm contemplating it to try to figure this out. I am so thrilled with that. Thank you so much. I'm complete.
Yeah, thank you. And another thing I would say that really describes love is life living. Who else would like to share based on your contemplation? Okay, go ahead, Susan.
Thanks. As I was watching that, it was apparent to me that the fool on the hill that was acting it out was just happy, just seemed to be loving life from where he was in every scene, no matter what he was doing. So it wasn't the doing or the internal idea of what he was doing. He wasn't judging. It's the others that are judging us from the external. And one thing it reminded me of, I used to teach gifted and talented kids. And that's kind of the bell curve. That's the 3% of the population in any given school that is really thinking outside the box 100% of the time. So it was a challenge for me to keep up with them academically, but also, you know, intellectually and emotionally too. They have different needs and different ways of seeing the world. So it was fascinating to be able to communicate and get on the level with those particular students. And they were happy as well. I mean, it wasn't a matter, it was almost like they were given this God-given defense or bubble around them, most of them, to where they knew who they were. There was this inner spirit within them that they knew who they were. They knew what they could do. They knew their parameters. And, you know, the rest of the world didn't matter so much. And I'm speaking, you know, generalizing. There were some that were, you know, in some emotional problems because of that. But that's what this guy reminded me of, the fool on the hill, just happy to be and happy with what was in front of him. And they were the seer that was seeing from the inside and able to produce, you know, a certain sense of flow with their lives and who they were.
Yeah, thank you very much. And, you know, I'm remembering when Jeffrey Martin said on Sunday night something about Bernadette Roberts not exhibiting love. And the example he gave was how when people introduced themselves, she was kind of shooting down everything they said in their introduction. And then one person became so fearful that he left with his bags during the break after the introduction. And she said, well, you know, that happens. And he was interpreting all of this as not love. But, you know, maybe I would not even put the maybe in myself. I'm being generous. Maybe that's not an accurate interpretation of what love is. I mean, the guy in the video, if somebody walked out on him, would he, do we have to be upset that somebody left to love? Do we have to run after somebody who has left and beg them to come back and apologize for how rough we were in the introduction to be love? Who else would like to share? Shana.
To me, it's Lao Tzu is talking about being in the Tao, being completely in the Tao, letting the Tao move everything I do. Whereas the other description is living from thinking, living from emotions. And it's not that we're not happy. We can be blissfully happy when we're in the Tao. Everything flows. We know who we are. We know what we're supposed to do. We're empty about deciding what to do, deciding how to be. We just are the Tao. That was my contemplation.
Thank you very much. Cheryl, did you want to share? I thought I saw you run over to the computer. Then you ran back, but...
yeah, it's very similar contemplation that Rayla shared. What I see is love is not an emotion, it is a state of being. And then what came up also from you, Regina, is mentioning about the Kabbalah, you were Regina Ing and the Cheryl Ing, it's more of a state. It's more of a the awareness of that. You know, just being. So, you know, and I saw how much fun he was having. He was in joy while he was doing anything, whether he was rolling down the hill or he was in town eating an ice cream cone or he was petting the dog. And he was being. That's my contemplation.
Yeah, and he was not offended when the man pulled the dog away, right?
Right. Exactly.
That's like Bernadette not being offended when the man leaves her gathering after the introduction.
Yeah.
How about you, Jacqueline? Do you have something you want to share?
Sure. I think it's probably been said, but I'll reiterate the joy and the freedom. And it was fun to watch, you know, us go through these different videos to get to the one, but boy, was that the one, because the and I just can feel it coursing through me now, just the total freedom in that. And that's what this verse in the Tao Te Ching points to. And I think you said it well a moment ago when you said something like, it's life living, which is better than living life, because right, it is life living without restrictions, without limitations, without needs. Yeah, that's all.
Thank you. And when I was the scribe of NTI, I struggled with what love was, because I had the same kind of human ideas that other people have about what love is. And there were two words that Spirit used with me to help me understand love. One of those words was freedom, which Jacqueline just mentioned. Love is freedom. And the other word was acceptance, which later evolved into openness. But you could tell that there was a total acceptance. Again, when the man with the dog pulled the dog away and left, there wasn't a judgment of that moment or a rejection of that moment. There was a total acceptance of that moment or a total openness to that moment. Because anytime, think about it, anytime you reject or judge, can that be called love? It really can't. So if you're rejecting or judging the fact that a man pulled a dog away and, you know, didn't want you to pet his dog, right? Then you are not loving, right? It's just that simple. So Susan mentioned non-judgment, right? So, you know, if we want to use a negative term, love is non-judgment, right? And so what Lao Tzu is describing here, even though to people who are excited as though they're watching a parade, it sounds boring. In fact, I had someone say to me, I think it was just last week, that it sounded boring. But did that boy in that video look bored? No, it's not boring. And I know it's not boring from my very own experience. I'm going to share this, even though it's a little more personal than I usually share. Not that I mind sharing personal things about myself, but this involves someone else's names. But I'm going to share it anyway. Some of you remember that, in December, Ken resigned as the sanctuary director, and Ken and Rebecca have pulled away from Awakening together. They're not ministers anymore. They canceled their minister ordination and different things like that. And as a result, every now and then, almost every time somebody comes here, one of the questions that I get asked is how I feel about that. I actually don't feel anything. Nothing negative and nothing positive. And do you know what's in that space? Just peace, love. I mean, you know, if Ken and Rebecca, I doubt that it will happen, but if Ken and Rebecca were to come back now and say, we want to come back, you know, we want our ministers, wonderful. And if they never come back, wonderful. And you see, in that, there's joy. There's also love. There's freedom. They not only love and freedom for me, but love and freedom for them. Right? I hold no expectation that they were supposed to remain committed to Awakening. They live 3 minutes from me. I can walk to their house in 10 minutes. But there's no expectation that we should have a relationship. You know, just last week, oh no, it's actually Monday night, somebody said something about Ken and Rebecca, and I said, I don't even think about them. And that wasn't rudeness. It's just that they're not in front of me. You know, they're not in front of me. In fact, when Jasmine is not in front of me, I'm not sitting around thinking about Jasmine either, and she's my daughter. You see? And I loved last night when we were reading from Jeffrey Martin's book, the way he described what most people think is parental love. He described it as a nervous preoccupation. Right? And that's exactly what it is, a nervous preoccupation. I remember when Jan Fraser was here, she stayed at my house. And at that point, I was just trying to make casual conversation, which I quit right away because I realized there was no sense in it. I didn't need it. She didn't need it. So I stopped. But the question I asked her because I know she has two children. So the question I asked her, and they're adults, by the way. The question I asked her, just trying to make conversation, is how are your children? And she had this blank face, this blank look on her face. And I understood that perfectly. She has no idea how they are. They're not here. Any answer she would give to that would be imaginary. Now she came up with some polite answer like, you know, I assume they're okay. But because that's how I am also, I understood immediately what that blank look meant. I understood immediately what I was trying to do, make conversation. And I understood immediately that it was completely unnecessary. And I stopped. The conversation stopped right there. And we just went on being. One of the things we did with her while she was here was we took her out to this place here in Pueblo, where they have injured birds, big birds, birds of prey. And we just walked around and looked at the birds. And that was extremely fulfilling. I loved being with the birds, looking at the birds, and I could tell she loved being with the birds and looking at the birds. Now, the funny thing is, there are people who would think that because at that time, neither of us were really aware of what was going on in our children's lives, that there was love absent. But there wasn't love absent. The love was with whatever was in front of us. And at that moment, our children weren't in front of us. You know? A nervous preoccupation to be thinking about your children all the time while they're not in front of you. Especially your adult children. And of course, people have the same nervous preoccupation with parents, the same nervous preoccupation with spouses. You know, thinking about somebody that's not in front of you, imagining what they're doing, imagining it should be different than it is, making up stories and believing them. And that's what humans call love. Okay, think about that for a moment. It's very possessive. It's very controlling. And it was one of the first things that when I started listening to guidance, one of the first things that Holy Spirit asked me to let go of with my own daughter. Right? So I guess the question to contemplate here is, what if love is entirely different from what we think it is? And therefore, it's actually a completely unfair and inaccurate statement to say that people from location four and above don't feel love. What if it's actually the opposite? What if we're the ones that don't feel love? You might just look at your personal relationships, which is where we usually determine there's love. Maybe do this with journaling. And notice what's really there. You know, notice, is there desire for things to be different there? Is there wanting to control or manipulate and have the other person be a certain way there? Are there expectations there that when they're not met, you get upset? You know, is it really love or is it a nervous preoccupation? You know, truthfully. And then, does it really make you happy? Or does it only appear to make you happy temporarily when you think it's going exactly the way you want it to? By the way, which is very selfish. Right? Going exactly the way you want it to. You know, when everything seems just right, the stars are aligned, then you're happy with that love and that relationship the way it is. Otherwise, you're not happy. I will also tell you that there is kind of something wrong with your love. And you know this if you've read A Course in Miracles. If it's special, and by special, I mean you love some people, but not others. You know, like if you love your children, but you strongly dislike some of their friends. You know, or their teachers. Or their principal, or their other parent. That's not love either. I was watching something on TV yesterday or the day before. I don't remember what it was. I think it was a little news story that I was watching while I was eating, but it hasn't stuck in my mind. Oh, I think it was about bullying, but it hasn't really stuck in my mind real well what it was. But in it, they were interviewing parents. And it was just interesting to watch how the child, my child, was so special, and all the other children and the teachers and the administration were wrong. The loving all method is a wonderful practice because that's what love is. Love is loving all. Right? Love is not partial. I think it even says that in the Bible. Love is not partial, which means it doesn't love some and not others. So again, even based on my limited experience and how my mind has changed and how my emotions have kind of fallen away to this openness, I disagree that there's a love that we have that somehow people at location 4 and above lose. I think we don't know what love is. And we're the fools for wanting to cling to that form of suffering that we call love. And what I'll do, even though I don't usually do this, Dawn, is I'll go ahead and make the draft post because I want to put that video in the post so that people who are listening to the audio can actually watch the video. Because even though it did take us a few tries before we found the perfect video, I think it was the perfect video, and I would like everybody to get the chance to see it. Cheryl, are you just playing with the computer or do you want to talk again? Guess she's just playing with the computer. All right, well, why don't we just look at, since we have a little bit of time left, why don't we just look at how some other people translate this verse, see if there's anything else in here for us. So I'm opening up Wayne Dyer next. Wayne Dyer says, give up learning and you will be free. Oops. Give up learning and you will be free from all your cares. What is the difference between yes and no? What is the difference between good and evil? That's an interesting question. You know, like, does evil have to make me unhappy? Now, there's really ways that people deal with this. One way that I dealt with this for a long, long time was just saying there's no such thing as evil. And at one level, that's absolutely true. I mean, you know, if you go beyond the level of the world where all there is consciousness, or certainly if you go beyond consciousness, there's no such thing as evil. But why don't we just keep our feet on the ground for a moment? Is there anything at all in the world that maybe is accurately described as evil? Would you say, Jacqueline? I saw you say something.
Well, I just said everything. And can I say one more thing? And maybe it's not relevant. It just strikes me, it's been striking me lately, how weird it is that evil is live spelled backwards, which is what ego does. It's got the whole thing backwards. But thank you for letting me share.
Sure. Don, did you want to say something?
Yes. And I was noticing today with our lesson about veil, it talks about the veil will be lifted in lesson 122 in ACIM. And I was playing with that. I realized that a long time ago about the evil and the live spelled backwards. But also if you scramble the words of veil, evil's in there. So yeah. I was looking at that today. I'm like, but excuse me. What you were asking, is there evil in the world? I think a lot of, if you step back and look at why people do the things they do, it stems from confusion.
Yeah. And
there's a lot of confusion.
This is where I wanted to go. Yeah, this is where I wanted to go.
If we start with lie, and it comes from another person's mouth, and we love them, we cherish them. There's someone like, for instance, recently a lot of foul things came out of my son's mouth towards me, and I love him, but if I believed the things that he said, I would be in a lot of pain. There could be retaliation. See, that's a whole bunch of confusion, but if I have enough wherewithal to step back and look and say, whoa, wait a minute, he's hurting. And from his hurt and confusion and not knowing what truth is and questioning those thoughts he was throwing at me, that's where the pain is coming from.
Yeah.
He even engaged in fight or flight when he was running away. So I think a lot of these actions, even, and this is going to sound absolutely radical, but like even like rapists and murderers and molesters, like for instance, a rapist could there could be feeling like they want to recapture something that was lost in their youth. Maybe they had that happen to them. And so what they're trying to recapture is the sense of innocence. So then something screwy goes on the head with some extreme thought that is very, very confused. And then they think, oh, I'm going to recapture that innocence, get the innocence back that I lost. You see how that crazy, insane, twisted thought, if acted upon, could lead to a very, well, they would be breaking the law and a lot of people under a lot of people's eyes committing a felony or, you know, but it came from confusion.
Yes. Well, so, and I think what I wanted to try and get to, because I think that what happens in our minds sometimes is we either deny what we really believe, and I'm trying to avoid that for a moment, because there are things that could appear on the news that can shock the pants right off of you, and that's really what I want to talk about right now is evil, and notice this says, what is the difference between good and evil? And so I just want to, you know, we now only have about 3 minutes, but I want to pause and see if we can get to a genuine clarity about how the fool on the hill might ask, what is the difference between good and evil? And Jacqueline says, please take as much time as you can. Thank you. And I think that Don touched on it, but I wanted to pause and look at the evil first. I didn't want to run to the answer. Because that's what we do. We run to the answer and we don't pause and look at the evil. Right? I want to pause and look at the evil first. Just contemplate something that you perceived as evil. I know Jacqueline was shocked not too long ago about a little girl being beaten to death for not doing her homework. Right? So just pause and look at the evil for a moment. And let's not deny those appearances. And then the answer is... that the fool on the hill sees that as believing confusion. And it doesn't affect the love for the little girl or the father. Because there's no judgment. Remember Susan said about, you know, love being not judgment. Because there's no judgment, the love is not interrupted. The love, you know, I loved how Jeffrey Martin said that he asked Bernadette Roberts, or somebody in the gathering asked Bernadette Roberts, what is God's love? And she described it as this feeling that arises from her belly, right? And whether you feel it arising from your body or from your belly or from your heart or wherever it comes from, the point is, at some point you become aware of this ongoing love, peace, joy. It's all one thing. Some people call it bliss. And that ongoing love, peace, joy is no longer interrupted by your own judgment. Which means even when the appearance of evil occurs, because there's no judgment, the love, peace, joy in you is not interrupted. It doesn't mean that you love that. It's not about a me and a that, right? It's not a subject-object thing. Just the love itself, the happiness itself, the freedom itself, these are all the same things, is not interrupted by the appearance. Yes, Jacqueline.
Yeah, oftentimes encountering things that seem evil, and particularly when you just were reminding me of what I had been upset about recently, yeah. I have a visceral reaction. I mean, I want to throw up. Yeah, I don't know what to do with that, but I turn it back to you.
Well, yeah, that's a quick conditioned judgment. So, you know, some of these judgments are so fast, you don't even see them. And so you almost can only work with them in hindsight. That's what root cause inquiry is all about. Go back and say, why was that there? And I don't know your answer. But I can tell you a similar situation once several years ago when I found myself getting very upset. And of course, we've had school shootings for a while now. So to some degree, unfortunately, we've become used to them. But there, even with that in place, there was one school shooting that really upset me. And that was when a man walked into an Amish school and shot a bunch of kids. And for some reason, that really affected me more than some of the other school shootings. And so I knew I had to look at it. And when I looked at it, there was something about Amish that represented just complete innocence to me. Like, these people aren't even a part of the world. And this evil came in and destroyed innocence. And I had to really look at that belief. Am I getting there, Jacqueline? I had to look at the belief that evil could destroy innocence. That was a false belief I found in my mind. I had to really look at that, see that I believed that, and question that until I was able to see that that was not true. So again, some things, sometimes root cause inquiry is absolutely necessary to find out why we're upset. But again, if you don't understand enlightenment, you know, which is what Lao Tzu is describing in verse 20, if you don't understand enlightenment, it may look like an uncaring person when they don't get all upset because the father killed a five-year-old girl, or a man walked into an Amish school and killed a bunch of, you know, Amish children, or whatever else the current evil is. And it's not that. As hard as it is for people to accept, it's not that. The reason we're upset is our judgment. The reason they're not upset is they no longer judge. And let me ask you this. Do you think the evil in the world comes from the judging mind or the non-judging mind? Yeah, you guys are laughing, so you know the answer to that. Right. So with that, I think I didn't get to finish reading any other, but that's fine. That was enough of discussion. We are out of time. So I'm going to release the mic. I will create the draft post today only so I can put the video in it. And then Jacqueline, I'll be listening to you on the speaker in the house while I do my Wednesday house cleaning. Thank you.